Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Health Wealth Podcast. This week, we speak to Thomas Criaras of Married at First Sight UK fame on his rollercoaster health journey. Thomas has been through many ups and downs and opens up on his struggles with a poor relationship with food, emotionally abusive relationships, and seeing his health suffer due to severe stress. We also get an in-depth behind-the-scenes look into how Married at First Sight affected him personally, both mentally and physically. We also spend a bit of time digging into how important your mindset and your attitude is to your overall health and how your perspective can completely change your life and how you feel. This is a hugely important listen for anyone who has experienced struggles with eating disorders, severe stress, and poor mental health, which is affecting their physical health. Thomas is living proof that no matter how bad it may seem at the time, you can always regain your health one step at a time if you're willing to put in the work and change your mindset. Hopefully you enjoy the show, so let's jump right in. Today I'm joined by Thomas Criaras. I think, did I do all right with the pronunciation?
You did absolutely fine. First time's the charm.
Brilliant. There we go. That was it. That's the hardest bit out of the way now. I got the name right. So we're gonna talk to Thomas about his health journey. See what happened, what he's learned and how it's gone along the way, and see what we can learn from it. So first off, Thomas, thank you for coming on the show, and how are you today?
No, honestly, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. And yeah, I'm really good, honestly. I'm, you know, thriving life. I honestly can't complain about anything. Although I was feeling a bit down today when I was going to the gym, went to get some fuel, had a laugh with someone, and then I was feeling really happy. I was like, oh, it's just like, sometimes you need to talk to someone. Because I've been behind my desk working all day. So sometimes it's just like, you need to speak to someone. That yeah. Actually, just to lift your spirits.
That's it. A bit of social contact is always good. All right. So I guess a perfect place to start is at the beginning. So take us back to, you know, where you kind of got interested in health and fitness and where your journey started and what led you to that.
Basically, I've always been into my fitness because when I was younger, I used to do track. So I used to do track and field events. I also used to play rugby, quite a competitive level. I played for a club in Jakarta, Indonesia. I also represented my school internationally in CSAC, which is an international rugby competition, where they do football as well and swimming. So I've always been pretty fit. But then what happened was when I was 16, I was 5'7", 5'8" at the time. Obviously young, we're taller now, don't worry. when I was 5'8", I was about 75 to 80 kilograms. So I was quite chonky. And I was relatively lean as well, and I was incredibly fit, but then I got injured. And I snapped my clavicle. A common injury, right? What happened was, I was playing my first under-21s game, and I shouldn't have been in that game because I was 16. Because they just needed someone. And I got dogpiled. So my mate said it was like a dry twig snapping, like that. And then the nurse, who thought my shoulder was just dislocated, ended up dislocating my shoulder that was already broken, and then relocated it after realizing what she had done. So what happened was I was left with a gammy arm for a little while, and I never got properly rehabilitated because what happened was after a few months I went to boarding school. So I was away from my family, and when you're in boarding school, you don't have time. We had Saturday school, chapel on Sunday. When I was like, now time to sort this out, because I was fine by the time I was here, really. So I remember from when I had the injury, I got a bit fitter afterwards. I did play rugby at my boarding school in Scotland, in Edinburgh. And then what happened was, when I went to university, that's when it went downhill. I went to 55 kilograms. When I was at university. So when I graduated my undergrad, I was weak. I was a small man, generally. So I was 5'9" and 55 kilograms. That's underweight.
Yeah.
It was bad. And I do have issues with eating. So sometimes when I'm feeling low, I feel like I don't really deserve the food. So I feel like I need to work for it to actually eat. So that impacts me sometimes. Especially if I'm not going to the gym or I've fallen out of the habit. But then since then, I had a really bad relationship, and spitefully, I went to the gym.
Yeah.
Regained the weight. So I got to, I was 80 kilograms in 2022 and then did the show. But when I went into the show, I was not in the best place. My confidence had just been completely knocked, especially after my last relationship. And I wasn't happy. And our mental health reflects in our physical health. Yeah. You would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when, for example, you saw me on the show, Married at First Sight, that wasn't my best self. And I remember saying my blooming vows, you've got me as my best self. I was like, it's so cringe looking back. I think the best way to describe me, someone else I saw it on Twitter, described me as a marionette doll that has been brought back to life but doesn't know it yet. because there was nothing to me then, just because I'd hidden everything behind like a big wall of china, because you can get hurt. But yeah. And then by the time the show ended, I was 69 kilograms, but now we're 76. So we're the strongest we've ever been right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good to hear. That's great to hear. So with the show, I mean, how much weight did you lose during it then? That's quite a drop, isn't it?
I don't blame the show. The show, Channel 4 and CPL, the people who do the production for it, were phenomenal. They gave you every bit of support you needed. If you needed to talk to someone, they gave you someone. If you needed food, they'd order you food, because they really took into account how stressful this was. And what really comes down to it is, you know how they say there are hard gainers and hard losers? It's 100% to do with your relationship with food when it comes to stress. People who are hard losers eat when they're stressed. I'm a hard gainer because I don't eat when I'm stressed. And this is a high stress environment when they're asking questions and pressuring you to do things that you aren't necessarily comfortable with, or forcing or questioning a relationship and saying, well, if you don't have those feelings in a relationship, especially at the beginning of the show, then why are you here? And saying, I didn't basically deserve to be there. And I just remember that the stress got so bad. And then by the end, I'd lost 7 kilograms.
Yeah.
Wow. By the end.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an important thing, that the effect that stress has on our physical health, obviously on our mental, but our physical as well. It's stress is a real has a real drain on us and really affects people. You know, there's even with illnesses and stuff, they can just come up from stress. I mean, did you, obviously you lost the weight and you were stressed, did you start having any physical kind of signs of the stress as well? Did you have any physical symptoms of anything, or were you not so bad?
This is really bad. So when I get stressed, I thought it was just in cartoons, but my eye starts twitching. It started doing that when I get really stressed, and I couldn't stop it. And I remember being really paranoid. It's something on camera. They're going to see my eye having an epileptic seizure from all the stress. But I'll be honest, like, it wasn't that bad. Like, it seems bad at the time, but I think I just react to the small things more than the big things. I catastrophize and have dealt with that. So that's the thing. That's something I've really learned from doing the show as well, addressing anxiety and catastrophizing. Although I got myself a smartwatch recently, and I was just sitting there behind my desk, and my watch gave me a beep, and my resting heart rate 120, because I was thinking, catastrophizing about something. Like, oh my God. So then I was like, okay, let's just not think about anything. Went down to 70. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's the mental side is you know, it's so linked to the physical, and our brain has such power that you're just thinking about something and your heart rate goes up. It's you have to wonder whether smartwatches are a good idea or a bad idea to
at least it lets me know when I chill out. Like, bro, it's like saying, bro, calm down, it's okay. Chill out, man, are you having a heart attack? Well, you've got your calories done for the day, you're just sitting there.
Oh dear, that's true. That is true. Lets us know things. It can be good, you know, to track it and to see how it's actually affecting you. Which I think we don't really take into account how much it affects, especially when it comes to stress. You know, people are, you know, say, "Oh, I've been feeling rubbish and whatever," and I'm not sure what it is. And then you find out how much stress they're under, and you think, well, yeah, maybe that's part of it. You're literally stressed out. I know, like you said about your eye twitching. I'm much better now, but you know, a while back I was in a really stressful situation for a while, and I would get one side of my face would feel tight when I was stressed. I could just feel it, like all tight. Yeah, like the, oh my you God. Get those physical symptoms with it. It's crazy.
They are mad. I think one thing that's really bad, my hair falls out when I get stressed.
Yeah.
So remember on the show, there were all these complaints about how I was leaving my hair everywhere and I was shedding like a cat. I'm like, well, you know, you are what you eat. I'm joking. it's mad. Like, I'm really bad for when I get really stressed. I grind my teeth when I'm asleep as well.
Yes.
So I've got a gum shield for that.
Mm.
I haven't been so bad lately, but my brother said when I was a kid, it was diabolical to grow up with.
Really?
He said he'd wake up to me grinding my teeth in bed
when
we used to share a room when we were younger. But it's quite funny, but I think that's what's given me my big jaw.
You've been working it.
No need for Ewing. I'll just grind my teeth when I'm stressed, mate.
Yeah, I think that's what I was doing too, which was causing some of the, you know, the pain up there. And you say in terms of the hair loss, I remember this when I got 7 years back, I got married and we bought a house and I was renovating it all. And it was, you know, super stressful getting everything done. And just down here on my neck, I had two circles, just bald patches just started appearing.
No.
Seriously, like these full on patches. And after the wedding, they just disappeared. And it was just fully stressed. It was like weird. And my wife called them like my alien marks or something. They just these two circles just appeared. It was crazy. That's what stress can do.
Well, bro, if it makes you feel any better, I know how stressful weddings are. I know
yes,
how
of course. Of course you do. Yeah. At least I had some notice for mine. You were just like thrown in.
thrown into the mix.
So tell us a bit. You mentioned at the beginning of so you grew up in Indonesia, did you? You said about using school and you're playing rugby there. What was that like? And how come did you start? Were you born in the UK and then you went out there, or were you born out in Indonesia?
Yeah, so I'm what you call a third culture kid. So you're born to two different cultures and you grow up in a third.
Okay.
So for example, I was born in Glasgow.
Oh, nice. My dad's from Glasgow.
Ah, good man. And then grew up in Wiltshire for a little bit and then moved out to Indonesia to be with my dad because my dad is an expat, so he works abroad. So, for example, now he lives in Panama City. So he's been all over. He used to be in Jamaica, Burma, and he works in telcoms. And yeah, we grew up, I grew up over there, and it was a phenomenal experience and it really opens your eyes to the bigger picture. But with that comes its drawbacks. It means there's no one like you. So, for example, when we were growing up there, there was no one like you. Yeah, there were other British people, but there's no one like you. So, for example, half Scottish. When I go to Scotland, I'm not Scottish.
Yeah.
Evidently. When I go to Greece, I look Greek, especially with a tan. But then when it comes to the culture and everything, it's like, oh, I'm not culturally Greek, even though I have brought a bit of that culture into my life. Not Indonesian, obviously. So then when when English people interact with me, even though I would say I'm culturally English, they go, oh, there's something different. Certain words, I use Americanisms because I grew up around Americans. I also didn't grow up with the same things British people grew up, so I don't have the same nostalgia factor. So when people, like, for example, when I'm really close with JJ and Luke, for example, from the show, and people go, well, that's a really odd friendship. But for me, that's no, I have to be friends with people who aren't like me because that's the only people there are.
Yeah. And I think that's a good thing. I think to mix with people who are different to you is a good thing anyway. I think.
Definitely. It broadens the horizons, but it's also, it would be nice to have my people.
Mm.
And my people are just the people I keep close to me. Whereas, for example, my mum, Glaswegian. Someone comes into her place of work and says she's from Glasgow, they'll be talking for an hour because that's her person, they'll be immediate friends.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, oh, you grew up abroad and everyone was different to you? Okay, we're friends. that's my people.
That's your way into it. Yeah, and it's good. I mean, it's great to have that different experience that you had growing up there. I imagine what is life like out there? I imagine the stresses of life are maybe quite different growing up in a place like that.
In Indonesia, very blessed, very privileged. For example, the company my dad worked for paid for private school, paid for the house, paid for staff. So for example, we had a driver and we had two maids. We had someone who looked after the house and three security guards. And my dad didn't pay tax because it's already come out the money before it's given to you, because that's how the expat and payroll works. So it was an incredibly privileged upbringing. And because it's Indonesia, there are rules, but there aren't really. You can do anything you want. It was lawless. We were renting houses at 14 and hosting house parties with all the international kids. So what happens is you pay 20,000 rupiah or 50,000 or 100,000 rupiah, depending on how big the investment was into the party. And then you get free access to the booze and alcohol that's already been bought in there. So it'd be free bottles and everything like that. It was absolutely mad. A phenomenal growing up experience. And I remember coming back to the UK and remember the nights out, saying, oh, these nights out are nowhere near as good. And then thinking, yeah, we were like, for example, there was the son of the second richest man in Indonesia, who was in my brother's year. And you are surrounded by these mega wealthy people who are so lovely, but also in a different world.
Yeah.
It was very weird. So for example, I went from the ultimate freedom, I went from the ultimate freedom in Indonesia to the ultimate constriction, which is boarding school.
Yeah.
I was literally getting pizza from behind bars on my one evening off. No, I had two evenings off a week. I had Wednesday evening off, I had Saturday evening off, and then we had chapel on Sunday. But you were allowed out for 5 hours of the school, then you had to go to chapel. So it's constrictive.
Yeah. So where did you go boarding school?
I went to Fettes College in Edinburgh.
Okay.
I went there all the time, and it was a lovely place. Edinburgh is like a lovely place, but it's like it's the same school as Tony Blair.
Oh, right. Oh, I see.
And the bronze bust was obviously in the basement after what happened. it was a great experience, and I love my short tenure there. Made some brilliant friends there, and it was so I have seen everything.
Yeah,
I have seen it. I think I've had so many different experiences. When people say I really want to go traveling and see the world, I'm like, well, I'm up in that.
Yeah.
So I'm chill. Yeah. I've been all over Australasia. I've been all over Java. I've been all over East Asia. Yeah, I'm done with Asia.
You've experienced it.
Everyone goes, oh, the Guinea Islands are so beautiful. Been there, mate. Done that. I feel like Jay from the Inbetweeners. Puppet stories.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, I think that's great to experience it, because I think too many people are kind of trapped in this. We're brought up with this thing like Britain's the world. Yeah, I can only speak from my perspective in the UK, but yeah, like you don't want to go, like all these other places are dangerous and different and weird, and you go to these places and they're not, they're amazing, and I think we need to experience it more.
I will be honest, it is a privilege living in the UK, because unless you're in these bubbles, in these foreign countries, in these expat bubbles, where there's the mega wealthy there, it is quite dangerous. For example, when you go into the beaches of Bali, there's not one dangerous beach in the UK, let's be honest, unless Storm Aisha, whatever it's called, Isha, is coming to you. There are literally skull and crossbone red flags on the beaches of Bali that say you shouldn't go swimming because you will die.
Yeah.
That you get with your drinks in the Gili Islands, you will get offered Class A drugs. And there's not a hospital around, so if you get something bad,
yep,
you are on the precipice. And I remember my friend got punched in the face by a stripper, another one got mugged by a drug dealer when they were 16. So I've seen the bad. I'm just very lucky none of it's happened to me. You have to be incredibly careful. These places aren't bad, but you have to watch your back.
Yeah.
You have to watch your back. Like a good example is, so I went to Panama City, and with my friend, it's 5 o'clock in the morning, we're trying to get back to the flat. But we're in a yellow cab, and the advisory is don't go in a yellow cab in Central America, because this will happen. So the person I'm with, they can speak Spanish, and the person who's driving the cab is breaking up with his girlfriend over the phone. Well, she's breaking up with him, so it's getting very heated. Eventually, he stops to the side of the road and goes, right, okay, do you want Coke? And we're like, no, mate, can you just like take us back to the flat? And he goes, well, you either give me $100, American dollars, for some Coke, and I'll take you, or you get out now and pay the fare. And when we don't know where we are. I mean, I've only been here a week. So we're like, okay, we'll get out. Neither of us have any charge on the phone to get an Uber. So here, we're going from tower to tower, asking security, can we either charge our phone or can you point us in the right direction? Eventually, someone let us charge our phones because it's dark. We can't see the power. I would have been able to probably see it if it was lighter. I managed to charge a phone. So these are the dangers that you would never face in the UK.
Yeah.
So unless you have those experiences, you know what to avoid and what not to avoid and what not to do. You know what to do and what not to do.
Absolutely, that's it. You said about you went to university as well. Where did you go to university?
Yes, so for my undergrad, I went to Royal Holloway, beautiful university. Like the campus has been used in the season 4 for You. It was in Thor. It's been in loads of big movies. So it's a beautiful campus, a lovely chateau. And then for my postgrad, I went to Loughborough University. I tried to play rugby, got injured immediately, couldn't play rugby again. Hit my shoulder again. And ultimately, it comes down to the fact that, yeah, I think that I'm done with university. I've got my postgrad degree in finance and investment, but now I'm starting to be a financial advisor. So more qualifications, effort, it's taking time, but yeah, we'll get there eventually.
Nice. That's good. And obviously, you said at university was where it kind of your weight and health maybe started to go downhill. So what were the kind of things that affected that? Was it stress? Was it other things occupying your time? What was it that kind of had the effect on that?
I think during my undergrad, my relationship with food wasn't great. I wasn't eating well. It got to the point, I was my high school sweetheart kind of girlfriend. When I was in first year, I remember my flatmates were messaging her, like saying, well, we're concerned about Thomas, because he's like, his eating's not very good, he's losing weight. And then I didn't think I'd lost that much weight until I saw a picture of me in third year during my undergrad, and it was bad.
Yeah.
I looked like a scarecrow. It looked like someone had gotten clothes and put it over a mock-up of a mannequin.
Mm.
Or even a proper mannequin that looks like a human being. Like the frame.
Yeah.
it was so bad. And then I remember going to my mate was like saying, just come to the gym with us, like, see how you find this. I was like, okay, cool. I'll go back to the gym again because I hadn't been in such a long time. And I went from benching 120 kilograms when I was 16. I was like, and I could barely do 20.
Yeah.
When I was in my 20s, my early 20s, I was 20. Yeah, I was 20. And I'm like, oh, that's bad. That's so bad. So we just kept going back to the gym. And then I started dating this new girl at the time, and it was a very bad relationship. And I did get better when I was with her, but it was for the wrong reasons.
Mm.
Sometimes they always say your second love is not the right love, but this wasn't really love. It was more seeking validation. That's what I was doing. So for example, I take a picture when she was asking what I'm doing. I'd say, look, I'm in the gym. And she'd go, well, why are you lifting such light weights?
Wow.
It was absolutely mad.
Yeah.
So then me thinking, right, so we need to lift heavier weights. So we got bigger again for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
I changed for the wrong reasons for this girl, even though it did positively impact me. So my body weight completely improved. I'd gotten to about, by the time we'd broken up, almost 80 kilograms. Good. And yeah, it knocked my confidence so much. I just remember thinking, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point? Right? What's the point if the only person who gave you that time didn't really value you, then what's the point in working on yourself anymore?
Yeah.
Because no one's going to value it. That's basically where my negative mindset was. So by the time I'd started the show, that's when I was at my worst with that mindset, because it was more like an uphill struggle to fight, just work, just say, just do it. Come on, just go today. Keep going. Don't stop. And the only reason why I'd kept that positive weight at that time was through sheer discipline. Not through motivation, not through happiness, not through, it was through sheer discipline and habit. And that's the power of discipline. It gets you through your darkest times. So I remember after I come back from the gym, I'd be like, okay, I feel good. Yeah. We got an endorphin. We feel good. And it's the power of exercise. You need to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Even when you feel your absolute lowest, just go. Half-ass it. Because half-assing it is better than no-assing it.
Yeah, exactly. You're completely right with discipline. That's something we always say about is whatever it is, whether it's diet and whether it's exercise, it's about discipline, because there are going to be days when you don't feel like doing it. Nobody is going to feel like doing it every day. Yeah. So it's about the discipline.
100% do agree with that, because especially when I was doing the experiment, when I was doing Married at First Sight, discipline went out the window. And that's why I lost all the weight. I stopped eating. I stopped going to, I think went to the gym like 6-7 times in 2 months.
Yeah.
That's not how you do it.
No.
You get up every morning. You go, you make sure you eat at least to a maintenance, and that keeps you okay.
Yeah.
Maintain. That's what you want to do. Maintain at least.
Yeah, that's the minimum, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure you just don't lose it, because like you see, I think Joe Rogan said it. He said that even when he said not going is an excuse, saying you're tired, whatever reason, doesn't matter. You still go. You're never not tired enough. You're not working 10-hour days of manual labor anymore. We have nothing but time and leisure when we're not. Because like, I sit behind a desk. Yeah. I'm a desk worker. I've got soft hands. There's no excuse for me to say I'm tired, ever. Yeah. Ever. There's no excuse for me to say I'm not hungry to eat as well. So my strategy is, though, to stop me from losing the weight again, is if I'm feeling low, I get myself a KFC.
Okay.
You have to treat yourself to terrible food to keep you eating sometimes.
Yeah.
And it worked. I mean, somehow I still have abs. they're still there. Like, I was with JJ and Luke, we're in a group chat, and every day, I don't know why, I always had a Cornetto or a Magnum Firm in my hand. And it became noticed. Like, they always go, Thomas, you're always eating. You always got something. He's like, I need to. You need to. Always make sure I'm snacking on something. Like, if it's just nuts, protein pot, just even sweets. As long as you're exercising, sweets are okay.
What was your, obviously you said a bit about your issues with it. Was that your main issue, was that you just wouldn't eat at times, you know, with your relationship with food? Was that your main struggle?
It was, I'm incredibly restrictive sometimes with my food. So if I feel quite low, if I feel like I haven't earned, or if I haven't done something well, I feel like I don't deserve the food. So for example, if I feel like I haven't done well that day, whatever I've worked out, if I feel like I failed or something, won't touch my dinner. So, and it's a habit I developed when I was a teenager. And it's not a good habit. It's not a good habit. So it's whenever I'm feeling like that, it's really bad. I will just go to the shops and buy myself sweets.
Yeah.
Because I say, okay, I can eat sweets. Screw it. Just get some calories in. And because it's all about, over a long period of time, over about, I'd say, not a long period of time, but over a period of time, say a week, a given week, I need to be eating a calorie surplus because I am going to the gym. So because I don't eat breakfast, so I always eat within a small window, so I won't eat breakfast. I'll have something before I go to the gym, then I'll have dinner, and I'll maybe have a snack in between. So if I don't eat my dinner, which is basically OMAD, because I don't eat a big lunch, yeah. I need to supplement it. Yeah. And I don't do creatine, I don't do any whey protein powders, don't do any of that stuff. I just try and eat a relatively balanced food. So I'm always thinking, okay, get those calories in. Just get a packet of Skittles. Eat that tonight. At least then you're covering it, and you can make it up over the next week.
Yeah, that's good. You've got to learn to see what works for your situation, isn't it? And to improve that relationship. And it is important. It's hard. A lot of people have, you know, bad relationships with food. It's quite easy to, you know, develop these eating disorders and different things that people have, and they struggle with things. And it's quite hard to get past it, I think. So I think, like you've done, you've got to learn, just see what works for you and do that.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I found my rhythm over the last year, especially this 2023. I found what works. If you've seen my TikToks, you've seen my body transformation. It's been a mad one, going from, I remember when I left the show, I was 69 kilograms. I remember my bench was, what was it? It was 70. I could do 70 kilograms for 8 reps and maybe 4 for 80. Whereas I could do 100 easy, 225 pounds, clear that easy before the show over Christmas. And now I can do 121 rep.
Nice.
I'm really happy where I've come from. Yeah. And it is 100% because, yeah, I found my confidence in what I'm doing. And I'm doing okay, I'm doing well. Yeah. It's all about those positive affirmations. Because your state of mind is what you tell yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It is.
Because there was that study that said that on average, 80% of our thoughts are negative thoughts.
Wow. That meant, yeah.
Huge. And it shouldn't be that high. So whenever I'm finding myself feeling negative, I have my positive affirmation. I'm not going to say them because they are a bit, rogue. They are rogue. But it works for me.
Yeah, I think you need to. The things that you're telling yourself, that you're thinking, they, you know, you speak them into being. I think it's important to have those positive things. Like before, when we spoke and you said, I'm not surviving, I'm thriving. It's good. Like just that response you have to people when they say, like, someone says to you, oh, how are you doing? You're like, oh, I'm okay. Like, then you feel like that. But if you respond positively, you actually start to feel more positive, I think.
100%. It's like, have you heard of the halo effect?
No, I don't think so.
The halo effect is when you're around, you know, Chris Evans, the Captain America.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, if you've seen any of his interviews, he's just only positive. He only talks positively about people in his life. He only talks about how amazing his life is, how grateful he is for everything. So when you come away from that experience with Chris Evans, you think, I really like that guy. He's really positive. I want to see more of him.
Yeah.
Do the halo effect to yourself.
Yeah.
If you're only kind to yourself, I always say, treat yourself like you treat a dog. Yeah. When you see a dog, you want to pet it, you want to give it a treat, you want to make sure it's happy, you want to play with it. Do that to yourself. Well, not, don't play with yourself like that.
Yeah, it's not November, that far.
Yeah, don't take it that far. But you see what I mean. So I do that. Yeah. I have to tell myself, and it works. Little tricks like that, just reminding yourself to be positive. And you have to be positive because,
yeah,
like, life's short. There's no time to be negative. Yeah. Why are you just going to be negative? Like, if you fail at something, okay, get back on that horse and try again.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to learn from success, actually, failure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a lesson, isn't it? You can look at it as a loss or you can look at it as a lesson. They're two different perspectives and you're going to learn a lot more from taking it as a lesson. Absolutely. Mental health is so key. Everything comes from it. You know, our physical health, like you said, you know, when you were really stressed out and then your discipline went and your diet fell off and you lost weight. So if we let our mental health get away from us, it soon translates into our physical as well. So we've got to stay on top of that, I think.
You have to turn yourself into a robot sometimes when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And it sounds really bad to say, but you have to be in autopilot sometimes. So you just have to, it just means you can turn off and keep going until you find something that revitalizes you again.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, it's not sustainable. You're, like, look, let's be honest. We're not going to be happy all the time, every time.
Yeah.
There are going to be walls and obstacles that we face in life that we're going to have to climb over. We can't let those little things destroy us.
Yeah. You know,
I always say adversity I don't always say it, but I do believe adversity is the greatest catalyst for growth.
Mm, absolutely. I think everything, it's when you're put under pressure is when you, you could, well, some people will shrink away, but really true growth comes under pressure, for not just for humans, for other things in life as well. I think that's absolutely right.
Every great artist, every great athlete, every great person achieved what they did through adversity.
Yeah.
You very rarely hear a success through coddling.
Yeah.
It happens, obviously, but it's not success from one's own energy. It's success from that other person.
Yeah.
And it's about fighting through it and seeing everything as a lesson, and always knowing the sun will always rise the next day. That's what I used to always tell myself. Like, yeah, with my ex, she's not a bad person. She just wasn't good to me.
Yeah.
Whenever she'd break up with me, she broke up with me like over 100 times in 2 years. Wow. So like twice a week. I used to always say, the sun's going to rise the next day. Just smile. So I'd be grinning with tears running down my face after the way she'd treat me every day on the way to work. Like, just trying to try and be happy. And like, it's not the end of the world. So what? It's just one person.
Yeah.
It's a reflection of them. It's not you. Having those just positive affirmations to remind yourself that, look, you're okay.
Yeah.
Life's good. Remind yourself why life's good. Remind yourself that things are doing well, not things bad happening. Because everyone's got bad things happening in their lives. No matter how successful you are, no matter how privileged you are, there's always a relative suffering. And you can't focus on it.
Yeah. That's it. It's about that perspective, isn't it? Just stepping back, stopping for a minute. Like you say, these things, we get real obsessed. We think the whole world revolves around them, you know, like with your relationship and things. And you've got to just step back and perspective. Like you said, look, I'm still alive. I'm breathing. I've got somewhere to live. I've got food. I'm doing better than a lot of people in the world. And we got to just, as you say, concentrate on the positives.
Yeah, honestly, you can't complain. Yeah, you can always have more, but be grateful for what you have. We're in the best time period ever to live in general. That's just like, it's hard not to be grateful.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got such a beautiful life. I've got amazing cats, amazing family, career's going well. I've got my master's, successful, being head of marketing for investment funds, worked for the UK's biggest investment platforms, being in the UK's biggest dating show. What more could I have done?
Yeah. Exactly. It's just framing that in that positive thing. Someone else could come into your situation and try and pick out a negative, but you know, you're looking at it from the positive, and there's plenty of positives there. So that's the way to look at it.
Yeah, it's like people, especially after doing the show, I've had a lot of people in my DMs pointing out negatives of things that happened in the show. Can't give them energy. It's always like it's like acknowledging the spaghetti monster behind Jupiter exists. Or believing the great juju up the mountain. But why would I give it energy? Because when you give it energy, it makes it real.
Yeah.
I just have to thank God we're only in the requests on Instagram, because it means I can just get okay.
Yeah.
Swipe. Yeah. You're gone. I don't have to see you anymore. Goodbye. what are these people thinking? It is very mad. Like, for example, I can't watch the new Love Island. Especially after what's going on between Callum and Molly on the new Love Island. I'm not sure if you know them.
I don't. My wife watches programs like that. I don't, yeah. but she watches them, so I hear the odd bit.
You just peek your head in. What are they doing now? Are they okay?
Yeah, what's going on?
Did they get together? Did they break up?
I just need an update each night.
Yeah. Like I said, Callum and Molly used to be in a relationship with one another, and now they're being put into Love Island All Stars together, and obviously there's obviously some hurt still there. And there are also, and you're seeing all these people judging them online. As a result, I can't watch the show because I know how they're feeling. And a lot of the people who do TV recognize that, yeah, we're putting ourselves in the spotlight. There's going to be people casting judgment onto us.
Yeah.
And we have to, and we went in knowing that may happen. But they're still real people.
Yeah.
And man, I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they're doing it, because I'm so lucky. I came out unscathed, relatively.
Yeah.
The worst comment I got was someone saying, Thomas doesn't belong on Maths, he belongs on GB News, telling us why sewage in the water is good for us. It's quite esoteric, but I love it. And honestly, these shows, like someone asked me, would you do I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out Here? And I just remember thinking, they're going through exactly what we went through, but we are going on holidays, we're getting food sorted out for us, we're having expenses and salary covered, we're sharing a room with, like, for example, I shared a room with someone who was beautiful for eight, 9 weeks, and I had an amazing time with her. And I was really stressed because it's a stressful environment. Yeah. So literally being put in an environment where you're having your worst fears thrown at you, I don't know how they don't come out with traumas,
yeah,
and mental health issues, like proper phobias and fears and traumas. Imagine that's literally a night terror being put in a tumbler full of maggots.
No. Yeah, I know. It's not. It doesn't sound like fun to me, I'll be honest.
Don't get me started on what they have to eat.
Yeah, true.
I would never eat it again. I'd be on an IV drip my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, they all lose their ton of weight on that as well, don't they, with the food they're given?
Oh, God, yeah. I don't know how they do it. Don't know how they do it.
No.
I feel like Married at First Sight is the best show because you have the best and most coddled experience.
Yeah.
Love Island, you don't. You have to wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning. You are filmed all day. Everything is under scrutiny, and it's live.
Yeah.
So there's no time to even adjust. Feel for them.
Yeah, no, that's true. It is difficult. It is a stressful environment, isn't it? And just while we're talking about the shows and stressful environments and stuff, I just wanted to ask you as well. Obviously, you said about before you went on the show, you were in maybe the worst place. So what was it that made you go on it?
I'll be honest, I've been single at that point. So I've been single for like 4 years now. So at the time I was single 3 years. And just dating wasn't working. And I thought, well, I'm relatively self-aware. Can I handle the pressure? Maybe, yeah. And I was just like, I would regret not doing it.
Yeah.
But I did have to give up my job at Hungry's Lansdowne. I don't really regret doing that. It was a good job, but you can get another job.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went on. I did say I at least wanted to get a friend out with the person I'm with. Like, yeah, we don't get on, so that's fine. But then I didn't expect to see how bad I am in a relationship. That's something that was really confronting, because you have to. I remember just thinking, if you don't change, if you don't improve, you leave. And that's what happened on the show. If you can adjust to the criticism that you're met with, whether it's from yourself or from others, you had to leave. You can survive. And I just found, for example, they do the psychometric test, which is really, really interesting. And it said, my problem solving in a relationship is 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
But they said my empathy is 10 out of 10. I'm really hyper aware of how other people feel, or at least I tend to be. So I ultimately know there's a problem, but I don't know what to do. And it was really ostentatious when I was in the experiment, because I remember she wanted affection, like just reassurance from me. And I wasn't giving her anything. I was like, nah, like, we're good. And I felt so bad because that was her giving the olive branch.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I was introverted at the beginning. I was quite standoffish. I just remember wanting everyone to just be over there.
Yeah.
And we do sometimes develop these cognitive distances about what we're like versus what we are.
Mm.
For example, I always thought I'm very open with how I feel. I'm very honest with how I feel. And I don't really hide anything about who I am. But then when I was with Roz, she was saying, no, you're very... And I always thought I was really extroverted. She's like, no, Thomas, you're coming across really introverted. You're very standoffish. You're like, I don't know anything about you. And it was like, oh, God. Because I had developed this habit over the years of, well, if you don't show who you are, they can't criticize you.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's what happened with my ex. I was always under constant scrutiny every time I talked to her. So, for example, if I answered the phone to her and said, "Hey, what's up?" she'd get so irate with me, she would potentially break up with me over the phone. and bought an alcohol for me for days.
Wow.
So it puts you in survival mode when you talk to people, or especially when you're in relationships, because you're there thinking, well, are they going to hate this or hate that about me? So, okay, well, I'm not sure anything. So so when someone said, Thomas, you're a marionette doll who looks like they've been brought back to life, doesn't know it yet. Oh, I see it now. Mm. It's because I was a husk, not revealing anything about myself to protect myself. And it took a few weeks for me to come out of that shell. So I'm glad I did the experience, because it meant I was, in retrospect, addressing some deep character flaws that I have, and I can now work on.
Yeah. I guess that's a great, like you said, you know, you've got to take positives from everything. And not many people get the chance to step back and look at themselves sort of from outside and see how they actually act. Like you said, we have these cognitive dissonance. We think we're a certain way. And I suppose that's a great positive, that you got to kind of step back, look at yourself, say, oh, okay, maybe I could improve that. Maybe I could improve that. And I suppose that's probably quite a good thing actually for people to do.
100%. And I don't necessarily think everyone needs therapy, right? You know, there are people, those people who say everyone could benefit from therapy. But I do believe if you are noticing a trend and you don't know why you're noticing this trend, I mean, there's something you can't see. Like, we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
So that's when you need to go to therapy. Because then you can talk it out. You say, well, I'm going through this and this and that. And you've got someone who's there to say, well, maybe you're doing this wrong. Maybe you need to work on this thing. And I'm trying to go back to therapy again, because over the years there's been this thing where, like, I haven't been able to settle down. And it's like, why is this? It's not every girl that I've seen, it's me, I'm the common denominator. So it's a me problem. So I need to go, right, what's my character flaw here that's really stopping me from doing this? Because it's like I'm not dating, like, not even thinking about that. The New Year's resolution for this year is work on yourself.
Yeah.
Because I find when I'm in a relationship, I'm not a priority at all. And who's the most important person in our lives? Us.
Ourselves, yeah.
And I always find, no, I put all my energy into this person. And look, not everyone's meant to be in your life forever.
Yeah.
When you do that, you lose yourself. So, like, when I did come into the experiment, I remember I said to the experts, to Mel, the people casting us, I said, I want my partner to be an independent person who I can make something new with without losing who I am.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to break those habits. And that's why you need therapy. So that's when I'd take contributive therapy, in my opinion, in my limited, ignorant opinion.
Oh, I agree. There's a place for needing to talk about stuff. And as you say, if there's things that keep happening, you know, being able to talk with someone about it and having therapy, I think is going to be a step forward for you and something good to improve. Because like you say, you need to put yourself first. A lot of times, you know, whatever you are, you know, I'm a husband and I'm a father. I've got kids, but I need to put time into myself, because if I put all my time into them, then I'm going to start becoming a worse human being. And, you know, and my health's going to go, and I'm not going to be able to be as good a dad or as good a husband as I could be. So sometimes you've got to put the energy in yourself so that you can be your best version for them. And sometimes we forget that and we think, oh no, we need to make everything about them. So I think it's just finding that balance with it.
Yeah. I always think a really great analogy is your relationship with someone is like two cars running side by side with each other, and you're giving the other fuel. If one person's giving more than the other, they will go off ahead without you and you'll be left in the dust.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure you're getting fuel from somewhere else as well, and working on stuff, making sure you still have the energy to be you and to keep up with what's going on in life.
Yeah, that's it. And being careful not to give your energy to people that don't give anything back as well. Because like you say, a relationship, things have to be going both ways, whether that's a friendship, a, you know, a business relationship, or a romantic relationship. You've got to be, if you're giving to them, they need to be given to you. Otherwise, like you say, they'll end up there. They've gone off and left you behind.
Exactly. And yeah, people come into our lives for a reason, and people don't want to give you that energy. That's just like, okay, well, there's billions of people out there.
Exactly.
Maybe someone else will do that. Maybe someone else will give me some energy. Yeah, it's like, Exactly, yeah, because I did have some really bad friendships as well, which I don't know why. I surrounded myself with people before the show, and in my past, with people who just sucked the life out of me, including my dad and friends who were like that, who were only just reminding me of all the negatives. Whereas now, I've got brilliant people in my life who are just reminding me of all the positives. Yes, they confront me about things I'm doing wrong. You need that. People who are able to tell that, give you that truth. But ultimately, life's good. Can't complain. I'm only surrounded by positive, brilliant people. And that's the way you want it to be.
Yeah, that's important. They say, you're the sum of the five people closest to you. And so if you're surrounded with negative people, that's going to drag you down. And if you surround yourself with positive people, it's going to drag you up. So you've got to make those choices, haven't you, and get the right people around you.
I'm just going to surround myself with 6'5", 300-pound Jack Geyser. I mean, not in that way. Not in that way. Wait, I think it, cut that out. Cut
we'll have to remove that bit.
that out. That did not go the way I wanted it to go.
Oh dear. I get what you mean. I get what you mean.
Good. You just want to get tall and jacked.
That's it. That's it. Get in the best shape possible.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So listen, I won't take up too much more of your time. I appreciate you giving it up. What's your plans moving forward? You hinted a bit of this year, you're going to be kind of working on yourself. What's your plans to do in terms of your health and fitness?
So in terms of my fitness, I don't like putting a weight on the scale that I want to reach, because it's all about how you look in the mirror
Yeah, I agree.
and how functionally fit you are. So I'm this year working my cardio. So we're doing some more running. I want to get stronger. So I want to get to around 140 kilogram one rep max bench press. I want to squat 160 kilograms. I'm only at 120 right now. So it's doable this year potentially if I work hard at it. And I just want to make sure by the end of the year, I'm fit, healthy, and happy, and maintaining what I have at the very least. So that's what we are. Just, we all have that homeostasis of happiness. I don't want to dip below. And so I'm putting my career, my health, and my mental health first.
That's awesome. That's a great way to be. And it's great to have goals as well to keep pushing forward. So I'm sure, from having spoken to you and seeing the positive attitude you have, I have no doubt that you're going to achieve that. And for people who want to follow along with your journey, let us know where people can find you and follow you.
People can follow me on Instagram, which is just at Thomas Kriaras. So it's Kriaras. That's how you spell that. And then you can also follow me on TikTok.
Yeah.
Same
Awesome.
username.
All right. We'll put your links in the show notes as well so people can easily find it and to follow along. And thank you once again for giving us your time and coming on the show and hopefully you've enjoyed yourself.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much for having me. Lovely meeting you.
That's all right, no problem. I'll speak to you again soon. And for everyone else, we'll see you next week and let's get optimal together.